Good afternoon and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on September 7th, 2021, and time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding meetings remotely. Joining me today is Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Commissioner Tony Olson, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Ann Spangler, our General Counsel, Melissa Collins, our Commission Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Lila Wall, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not speaking. We will ask for questions or comments on agenda items as each is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting while others may require more time. Please indicate you would like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if joining by phone today, dial *9 and I'll call on you to speak at the appropriate time. Are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda, commissioners?
Okay. Ms. Commissioner Olson, I would like to just make a comment on redistricting under commission business. Thanks.
Okay.
I sent a document to Allison and I asked it that it be placed on the agenda at places, added to at places. And it's a document that just shows it's a document relating to the draft document from Jason's team on time of day, the resolution, which is just a draft, but I was trying to get the suggested changes to the draft to them before the meeting, but at least it needs to go in or to be sent to that team for their consideration, because there are several problems in the writing, in the drafting, but I know it can be corrected very easily.
I'm confused. Are you trying to add an agenda item? Because I think that item is on the agenda, right?
Yes, but the document with the suggested edits, I don't know how to get those to Jason's team, because I was told to talk about it during commission business, but I don't want to go through the document, you know. So my hope was we could just attach it at places, add it to at places.
I think we should discuss it when we discuss that item, because it's something we're set to approve today, correct?
Well, it says it's in draft form. There's a big, you know, message over it that says draft.
Is this not our agenda item 5A?
Well, do you want me to point out where I think the changes need to be made?
No, I'm just saying let's talk about it when we get to that agenda item. Unless I'm misconstruing what you're talking about. You're talking about the resolution for the time of day rates?
Right, and I'd like to see some corrections to that draft.
Okay.
Before we vote on it.
Yeah, let's talk about that when we get to that agenda item.
Okay.
Okay, so the only change is to the agenda is Commissioner Olson wants some time under commission business to talk about redistricting. The meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you're from. Comments from the public is item 3 on the agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So next is item 2, recognition declarations. We have our Employee of the Month, Angela Johnston, and we have Julie Anderson here to introduce Angela.
Hi, good afternoon. Just want to do a quick sound check. Everybody can hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Perfect. So it is my great pleasure to be here today to introduce Angela Johnston as the district's September Employee of the Month. Angela began her career with the PUD on November 29th of 2010 as a financial analyst in charge of our bond compliance. In 2016, she was selected to fill the position of banking and fiscal coordinator in charge of cash management and the district's investment portfolio. In October of 2019, I was able to steal her away from Jim Herling. Thank you, Jim. Really appreciate it. And Angela became an accounting manager in the general accounting department, overseeing accounts payable, payroll, and financial reporting within our water and generation systems. Angela is an ambitious and tenacious person who has the ability to see process improvements and can bring them to fruition. She has a strong focus on serving both internal and external customers. During her employment, Angela has accomplished a great number of things, and if I listed them all, we'd be here for a really long time today. So I'm just going to do my best to hit some of the highlights. She has built the bond compliance program, oversaw the successful completion of some bond compliance state auditor's office and IRS tax audits, updated the district's investment reserve policies, developed a biweekly treasury email blast to improve communications between the treasury department and other district departments. She has served on our flexible benefits task force, banking service RFP process, financial advisor RFP process, and many other continuous improvement efforts. She's also overseen the implementation of new software tracking applications in the Treasury Department, as well as automation of bank files. Since she moved from Treasury over to General Accounting, Angela has worked to streamline processes in both payroll and in the accounts payable department. When our teams were all sent home in March of 2020, Angela worked endless hours to ensure that her team had all the tools necessary to work remotely. She worked with the payroll team to transition from paper-based to electronic processes. And for anyone who's never worked in payroll, they would know that that's no small feat. She's also worked countless hours assisting on the implementation of new accounting reporting requirements. And while all of this work is important, I think one of the things she's absolutely the best at is building positive relationships with everyone she meets. She's always looking to support others and find a way to get to yes. Angela loves the great outdoors and in her spare time loves to hike and sail with her family. And one of the things I've enjoyed most during the pandemic, if there's something to enjoy about it, is our work from home and seeing her kids in the background as they've been growing and learning and continuing their education. Teams has been a great opportunity for us to really connect on that level. And it's been wonderful to see that with Angela and her family. There are a lot of great people here at PUD, and Angela is definitely one of them. And it is my pleasure and honor to have worked with her these last 10 years. And I'm so proud that she's our September Employee of the Month. Normally at this point, I would turn her over to you with the full introduction, but Scott Jones, our CFO, would like to share a few thoughts as well. So I'm going to turn it over to him at this point.
Julia, thank you. And give me a head nod, at least if you can hear me out there. Just a really quick couple of points. Angela is very much a star in our group, and I'm very privileged for us to have an Employee of the Month that's representing our division. I'll give you two quick things, and Julia hit on both of these, but just to reinforce, one of the things that's been amazing to me is being able to do video calls with people while they're at home and when they have their families. And I don't know, it's been very rare that I've had a video call with Angela where she's not had to stop and whisper an answer to a homework question or something like that to one of her kids in the middle of all the other things that she's doing. And so the ability for her and all the rest of the employees that we have to juggle all of those things that they're having to do amazes me. My kids are older, so I don't quite have to deal with those things. But Angela's got, you know, a couple of kids running around and her husband and dogs and everything else, and she still manages to stay focused on the work that she's doing for us. Tenacious, the word that Julia used, is a good word for Angela. As a manager, You have employees that you have to light a fire under and employees you have to pull back because they're going, you know, 90 miles an hour. And Angela's definitely in the latter category. It's a lot easier to come to an ambitious and energetic employee and say, hey, let's step back. Let's pull this back. Let's pause this. That's a lot easier than having to light a fire under somebody to motivate them to do their job. We don't have to worry about that with Angela. She's eager to take on as much as humanly possible. So I couldn't be more proud. I really appreciate everything that she does. And Julia, thanks for the introduction. That was perfect. But I really appreciate the commission and John and others recognizing Angela from our group. She's fantastic and we're lucky to have her.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for all you do for the organization. It's so important for all employees to be involved in continuous improvement and challenge what we do and make processes better for our customers and for our internal customers. And frankly, just someone who's in charge of payroll becoming employee of the month, you must be very proficient, because if anything upsets somebody, it's having their pay mishandled or something. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't pretend to get into the weeds of payroll itself, but we've got an excellent payroll team that takes care of everyone's needs throughout the district. And I'm just there for moral support and guidance most of the time, which is important. So, especially with payroll.
Wonderful. Commissioners?
Yeah, I would just like to say a huge thank you. And you just seem to have this wonderful personality of calmness and you deal with a lot. And I guess, you know, we are just so fortunate to have you, and I'm glad you're being recognized. I think it's really important that we appreciate our staff members, and you're one of the best, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good that I'm exuding calmness right now. It's not always the case, as my managers have witnessed, but I try very hard most of the time to accomplish that. So I'm glad it's coming through.
Perfect.
Well, this is Commissioner Olson. Angela, where do I begin? You are a girl after my own heart. Automating things, improving processes, saving money, and resulted in over $100 million in new investments during a peak time in the market. Mm-hmm. Wow, girl. You have done a lot, and I commend you. Thank you. Right up the line of where my interest is. Good work.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, that investment, that was a doozy. And again, a team that I had helped me accomplish that, most definitely. It was pretty stressful. Lots of thinking and overthinking, but we made it happen and had some really good results with the portfolio that year, for sure.
Yeah, well, and the developing investment policy. Did one ever exist? I don't know.
We've had an investment policy for a really long time. These resolutions that we developed were actually related to the reserves. And we did have a policy with respect to the electric system, but we actually wrote up individualized reserve policies for the generation and the water systems as well, and updated that electric system one. So it was a big feat. Again, so many other people than just me, but it was really good for transparency, both to the district itself and all of the ratepayers, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are there any other of Angela's team members here, or John, you have anything you'd like to say? Not to put you on the spot, but I'll put you on the spot.
No, you know, I love to chime in on these, and Angela, you really are a rock star. You're amazing, both from a leader perspective and just part of the PUD family. You're amazing, and I'm so proud of you. You really deserve this.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Angela, is there anything else you'd like us to know? You've got you're calm and you've got the microphone.
Again, glad it's coming through as calmness. No, just thank you so much. As Julia and Scott noted, we're representing finance, and I'm just very excited to be able to do that for our group and give attention to everyone in finance and all of the hard work that we all do together. So thank you.
Well, if everyone could turn their cameras on, we can't really do a round of applause, but we can all give Angela a wave and thank her for her work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Angela.
Yep.
And if fine, let's do that more often.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
All right. Next is item three, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. So the first, we have two hands up so far. The first person is whose phone number ends in 1110. Go ahead, unmute yourself and you can talk.
This is James Deal. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Mr. Deal.
So I'm calling regarding the New Mexico Public Utility Commission. So the private utilities in New Mexico made a proposal to the Public Utility Commission that they be allowed to install smart meters. And they had to produce evidence of different kinds, and this is the response that came back from the Public Utility Commission. They concluded that smart meters that the private utility companies did not demonstrate that smart meters would save any money. Utility companies did not demonstrate that smart meters would produce energy efficiency. They did not demonstrate that the customers wanted smart meters or really understood the issues. That the private utility companies did not evaluate alternatives. That the utility companies did not say how they would protect customer data privacy. They did not address security issues. So I have sent a FOIA, a request for documents, to Snohomish County PUD asking if the PUD has addressed these same concerns. And because I still owe 60 cents for copies, I haven't received my response yet. I will send in my 60 cents. Now, we know that private utilities in this state are subject to the Utilities Commission, utilities down in Olympia. But the PUD, as it was presumed, they would be transparent, they would be honest, they would do everything only in the benefit of the people. So you're exempt from review from the Public Utility Commission in this state. But you're not exempt from doing your duty to the public. So, have you demonstrated that smart meters will save money? Of course you cannot. You cannot demonstrate this because they're electrical devices. They run constantly. They use electricity. So you're going to have to up the rate base and charge people more to cover this cost. Energy efficiency. Can you demonstrate this? No. Because they use up more electricity. They're always on. They get hot. They even catch fire. Have you demonstrated that customers want smart meters? Well, you sent out a questionnaire asking people, wouldn't it be nice to be able to know what time of day your usage is highest? Well, everybody, that's your way of sampling public opinion. And you reported that, oh, people really are going to like smart meters. But what you didn't tell them is that they can't get the report until the next day. This is not minute by minute, second by second, a feedback. And then there's one member of the PUD who continuously says that she's not going to do anything that raises the rates. Well, this has got to raise the rates. And so alternatives. Have you discussed alternatives with people? How about self-reporting? Apparently self-reporting is going to be available to opt-outs, but few people will be able to opt out, and a better alternative would be to spend the $90 million delivering fiber optic to every home in the service district that is not already served with broadband. Thus complementing the efforts of private enterprise. And security issues. These devices are hackable. They are a portal to all the smart devices that we'll be having in our homes. If you have trouble snoring, you get a CPAP device, and it is a smart device. And the smart meter will be a portal that will receive these communications. Your upcoming smart refrigerator, your smart toaster, all of this is going to be reported back. And when you talk to your device, I forget the name of it, it says, Alexa, do this or do that, turn down the heat. All this is going to be hackable, and security is not going to be something that you can deliver. So you need to rethink this thing. And a complaint I have is that you're saying that if you opt out, you're not going to get a rock-solid analog meter. You're just going to get a electronic meter that doesn't broadcast. Well, it's good that it doesn't broadcast, because it's going to fill the air constantly with this chatter.
Mr. Deal, you're at your 5 minutes. I'll give you another 30 seconds to wrap up.
Thank you very much. So we're going to be filling the air with more microwave radiation. It's all out of control. Down in Edmonds, AT&T is threatening to sue Edmonds if they don't allow them to put small 5G towers on every telephone pole in town. So you're not looking at the big picture. You're not looking out for the best interest of the public. You're going to raise the rates. You're going to make a lot of people sick, because some of us are already sensitive to electromagnetic radiation like this. Reconsider.
Thank you, Mr. Deal. Next, we have Sheila. Go ahead, Sheila. And Sheila, please unmute yourself and state your first and last name for the record. Sheila, you need to unmute yourself on your end. Well, it looks like we're having Sheila's having a technical problem, so I'm going to lower her hand. Okay. Next is item 4, our consent agenda. A, approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of August 17, 2021. B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? I'll look for hands. I'm not seeing any. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
No.
Okay.
Commissioner Olson. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And I may be way off course on this, but the award, and I'm not going to give the long number, annual source recommendation for ductile iron poles. And I was just curious, seems this vendor is the only one that carries these, but we're purchasing for, to me, a limited period of time. And is this one of those things that we are transitioning to, that there is a benefit for us to purchase with maybe one or two annual renewals? Based upon our need, would we get a better price?
So, Commissioner,
That's it. I hope you got where I was going.
I think I understand your question. Let me know if the answer doesn't help you out. This is not something that we've done in the past, where we've taken an entire scope of purchasing of a certain material on an annual basis as a sole source. And so we did limit it to a year, just to make everyone comfortable with the fact that we're only saying we're going to buy from this sole source manufacturer for a year's time. Okay. There could potentially be discomfort if we named a vendor a sole source for, say, 3 years. The market could change in that time, so we wanted to just make this a reasonable request at this time, and then see how it plays out in terms of market.
Good call. And my second issue is on contract acceptance, conditional contract acceptance for Moon Construction. Was this the award that Tony raised a big stink about?
I would never characterize anything that a commissioner did as a big stink. There were questions when we made the award about the process by which we awarded it. What happens after our contracts and purchasing makes the award, I would have to direct those questions to the project team in terms of what happened with the project, or maybe the legal team in terms of what happens with any claims or lawsuits. I can't provide any detail on that.
Well, someone else talk to me then.
Yeah. So Commissioner Olson, this is Ann Spangler, General Counsel. The project work was a little bit delayed during COVID, but it was satisfactorily completed. It's been completed for quite a while. One of the subs filed a claim against the retainage. And so there is a dispute between one of the subcontractors and Moon Construction about a claim against retainage. So one of the reasons you're seeing this conditional acceptance is our internal process, we usually wait until the contract has been accepted before we forward all the documentation to the state agencies for them to determine whether or not there are taxes, unemployment, prevailing wage issues, and things like that. But we're kind of in a catch-22 situation. If we were to wait and not do the contract acceptance until the claim against the retainage gets resolved, we could end up in a situation where then we go ahead and send all the paperwork to the state agencies and they determine that there are some amounts due. If we've already let the retainage go, we have no, you know, money to pay that with. So we are proposing a conditional acceptance here that will allow staff to submit all the paperwork to the state agencies and determine whether there are taxes or prevailing wage issues or other unemployment insurance that's due, so that we'll know, and they have the opportunity to join in that lawsuit against the retainage.
What is
kind of a lengthy explanation. So our only exposure on this is the retainage itself. So we're just holding on to that retainage.
What is the subs issue?
That I would have to turn to the project team on. I don't remember what this particular sub, I think.
You didn't get paid?
It had to do with extra cleanup costs that the prime had to incur. Okay. That's what their claim is, that they did substandard work. The prime has not paid the demand that the sub made.
Okay,
the sub made a claim for a change order.
We don't often
didn't pay it. We don't
often get in these situations, do we?
Well, no, we don't. Usually they work it out amongst themselves. For some reason, the sub in this case filed it as a lawsuit.
And I guess I need to talk with somebody in project. I know there's a lot of these are significant projects, and there's 12 amendments. Are these field order amendments? 12 amendments to the work.
Clark, do you have the answer to that question?
I would say that in this case, there's a mix of field orders, meaning that we've changed the work being done. There are also extensions for time. As Ann mentioned, this was delayed by COVID. There's a mixture. Without going back through the list, I couldn't tell you what the exact breakdown was, but it has been a mix of those types of amendments.
Commissioner, there are couple people from the project group on if you
know. But what I heard though was the contractor, the prime, completed the work to our satisfaction.
Correct.
Okay. Because I went back to that board meeting. Old Tony raised a lot of issues, but it sounds like this is more between the contractor and his sub, and we're just kind of caught in the middle.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's all. Thank you very much.
This is Adela. Hi. So this was co-managed by Ben Davis and myself, and I just do want to explain those 12 amendments because for this project, as ECDs were generated, we amended the contract on a monthly basis for the payout process. That's why it looks like there's so many of them.
Okay.
So we were like keeping it up so we didn't like hit the huge amount of ECDs at the end.
Yeah.
So we were
you used a lot of your retention. You used a lot of your, what do you call that money? Retained funds.
Contingency.
Yeah.
Contingency.
Yeah.
You used quite a bit of that. But yeah. I get it. Yeah. As long as you were satisfied with the work that I had issues initially with whether the contractor demonstrated the ability to do the work. So thank you very much. I'm over my questions.
Mm-hmm. Adelia, I may have missed it, but would you state your full name and your title?
So I'm Adela Santos. Can you hear me? Because I'm doing this on the phone because I'm in the open office. Adela Santos-Staben, and I'm project manager of facility engineering and grounds.
Okay, thank you so much.
And all right.
Commissioner Logan.
Yes.
if I could just go back, I was trying to follow all of these pieces for this part of the meeting. I was on my iPad and I overlooked some of my notes. So I wanted to go back just for a moment on the DI polls issue that Commissioner Olson mentioned. And so I did have a question. Throughout the whole US, does this mean that McWane has a monopoly position on this kind of polls, the whole US?
I can't speak for every market in the US. I can only speak for us declaring this a sole source for DI polls that meet our specific needs. They are the only manufacturer that we've found that makes polls that meet our needs.
Okay. And I know that you've already addressed that things may change. And I was thinking about this big infrastructure bill that is likely to be passed, we hope. And that, that may open up more manufacturers for things. And you've already, mentioned that, if things change, we'll look at other developments. So that was about that. And then I did, in this section, I did have a question about the new contract amendment with Sherelle Gordon. And now I can't find that resolution or that, I think it was almost $500,000, her contract, and that it was explained as adding new parts to the program, more people involved and all of that. Am I correct on that? And maybe Melissa Collins could speak to it. And also, when are we going to get an update on how you're measuring progress and what's going on? That's kind of a different issue, but it is a different, but I was pretty blown away by how big that contract is.
Well, Commissioner Wolf, we're adding more hours to her on a monthly basis. She's doing more training and coaching. And we're also, the added items are listed. She's going to be doing some more training for staff, some senior management training, leadership training. She's going to be working with HR for quite a while on their, on their strategy, which will take quite a bit of work. She'll also be working on, we'll be working on some communication platforms, the ELT strategic planning as well. And there's quite a bit of stuff that she's going to be doing, which will take probably through next year for sure. in addition to what she's already doing.
Okay, and I apologize that I haven't been able to locate it in the iPad, but is that right? It was about 400 and almost half a million dollars, right?
Yeah. Okay. The amendment's for 450,000.
Right. The amendment. And so anyway, well, as you know, from the beginning, I always thought that the commission was going to be a part of her services. And it turns out that was a false assumption or belief. So it kind of shocked me a little bit to see how much is going to the, not that it isn't important. I've been a strong supporter of the whole idea of DEI work. But as I say, I thought we were going to be a part of that. And we're not. So I think that was the main thing I had questions about. Okay.
Okay. Are there any other questions on the consent agenda, commissioners?
I have none.
Okay. I'd just like to make a comment. Thank you, Clark, for just doing the sole source for 1 year. I know that's an additional burden, but I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, Commissioner.
Next, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 5, public hearing in action. 5A, consideration of a resolution creating the district's rate schedule, supplemental residential time of day, and supplemental residential peak pricing service schedules. I will call for a motion.
I move approval, but this is the resolution that I wanted to discuss.
Right. So I will now convene a public hearing. We have Brian Booth available to answer any questions, provide a presentation. I was thinking, commissioners, it'd be nice to go through the presentation. It's short. So if you could do the presentation, Brian, and then we'll have plenty of opportunity to ask, have questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Commissioner. Peter Downhauer, I presented this last time around. Peter, are you available to kick this off?
I am. Let's go ahead and do it. Peter Downhauer, principal utility economist, also Brian Booth, senior manager in the Rates, Economics, and Energy Risk Management Department. Pleased to be here again this afternoon, commissioners, and happy to go through this presentation with you again. This was originally presented August 17th, as shown on the slide there. So as far as the agenda, we'll just go through the items again, our recent meetings, the launch and recruitment of Flex Energy, and then the supplemental rate schedules for the pilot, which include a time of day and a critical peak pricing rate schedule. All right. As we typically do, just some recent meetings that we had, not on there because this was originally presented on the 17th, but we updated you on the 17th of August with this presentation. Prior to that, we had a DER pilots update on May 4th of this year, and then December 1st of last year, an information session on the DER pilots. So we launched the Flex Energy pilot in the very end of May. We've been monitoring recruiting ever since then. We've had some tremendous efforts internally to market, communicate to customers, to design the program. And we've been really happy with what we've seen so far. What you're seeing now is our website that was put together. Excellent information on there.
Come back, please.
Since I have the opportunity, I'll again say thanks to all of the teams that participated in this. It was a joint effort.
I am in a meeting.
Here's some social communication. So we've been making an effort to reach out to customers in different modes. This is another one. We also have a Herald article that we got some publicity on. And this was early on, I think at the start of June that we saw this. The supplemental rate schedules, this is a summary of what the some of the benefits, the customer appeals are for the two supplementary rate schedules that are included in the pilot. In the flex time, there's a residential time of day rate. For customers, this means that if you have devices or if you're used to and you like having a more fixed schedule, then you can really set it and forget it on the devices that you can program. You know when they're going to be, the specific hours. As you can see with the clocks and the values shown, it's a three-tier rate during the wintertime. And in the non-wintertime, that peak rate goes away. For the wintertime peak rate, that's at 21.37 cents. This is a bit rounded from what you would have seen in the submitted documents for the rate hearing today. 21.37 cents per kilowatt hour. The weekday rate is very similar to our Schedule 7, 10.4 cents per kilowatt hour. And the discount rate is a 20% discount off of the weekday rate, just under 8 cents per kilowatt hour. And that's available year round. So that's pretty exciting. And I think customers will be very much looking forward to getting that. So you can see the hours as well shown between 5 and 8 p.m. and 7 to 10 a.m. during winter weekdays, so non-weekends and non-holidays. And the winter weekdays are going through from November 1st through February 28th, where the non-winter period is the rest of the year, which is March through October.
So Peter, I have a question about this slide. First off, it doesn't seem like it's 20%. It seems like it's more than 20%, and it seems like it's more than 10%. I never noticed that before, but 20% of 10.4 would get us down to, I think, 833 instead of 799. Is 20% just an approximation?
Yes, that's right, Commissioner. 20% of 10.4 would be 2.1, roughly. So yeah, your exact math is better than our rounded math here.
Okay. And then the other question is, and this gets to the amendment in the resolution or the addendum, is so here we're calling the yellow the weekday rate. But when we originally came out with this, we called it the standard rate. And so I was under the belief, and I think our online stuff says it, that would be our Schedule 7 rate. So I was surprised when I saw an addition to the rate schedule for the weekday rate.
Commissioner Logan, can you, I'm not sure what your exact question is. There is a slight difference between the weekday rate and the Schedule 7 rate. That is true.
But was that always intended for that to be a small difference?
Yeah, we intended for it to be very, very, very close to the Schedule 7 rate. And we thought that was sufficiently close. And it's a matter of essentially ensuring that the revenue generation as we project will be neutral so that this is not a revenue generating program, nor will we ideally lose any money through this program. So, with the levers that we're able to adjust here, having that very small adjustment to the Schedule 7 rate made sense to get the peak rate and the discount rate where we're targeting.
But the adjustment is an increase, right? Over the Schedule 7, not a decrease.
It is, yeah. And it's by, like I said, a very, very small fraction of a cent. Yeah, fraction of cents. And I can tell you exactly what it is here when I pull it up. It's
0.022, I think.
It's 0.022 dollars per kilowatt hour, or I should say cents per kilowatt.
Yeah, so two hundredths of a cent. Just to echo Peter's comment, we're of course dealing with very large volumes of kilowatt hours. So in order to make this revenue neutral, we had to tweak it just a little bit around the edges to make it so. And to Peter's point, we thought it was fungibly similar to our standard Schedule 7 rate.
Okay, but I guess okay.
I get where Commissioner Logan is going with this.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that we've told the public one thing. And then if you look at our frequently asked questions online, we say that what I think we now call the weekday rate, it was is our standard rate. So I realize there is always a little round off between the 10.414 and the 10.4. But I thought that was just for illustrative purposes. I'm just concerned. I mean, it's a small amount, I agree. But I'm just concerned that we sign people up, them thinking it's one thing, and then we change it. And of course, we can't guarantee the future, right? We're talking about a Bonneville pass-through increase. So this is going to change. But I'm just wondering if it shouldn't start out what we said it was going to be. And that's the same for the other one, too. The other one.
So are you, when you're saying the standard rate that we have mentioned before, this was in prior presentations that we've given to you?
Yeah, well, the 10.4 has been mentioned before, but in the past, it was called standard rate, I believe. So I went online to look at our frequently asked questions on our website. Mm-hmm. And there we have a statement that says all other hours will be billed at the PUD standard rate of 10.4 cents per kilowatt hour. So I guess what I expected in that attachment A is those two little numbers would be zero.
Mm-hmm. I do think in the terms and conditions, it is noted there, but that is unfortunate that it says standard and it doesn't say weekday rate. That is something that we've tried to use in both of our time of day programs, is to say weekday rate because it is an adjustment onto the Schedule 7. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would ask for any suggestions, or Brian, maybe you have another comment.
No, I think asking for some commission guidance on this one would be appropriate. We can certainly rejigger the rate so that the weekday rate is exactly the 10.414 cents. We'll have to adjust one of the other rates slightly to do that and keep it revenue neutral. We do have one more meeting in the month before the rate schedule would be hoped to go live. So we are able to do that. Or we can adjust the online materials to reflect what's in the rate schedules. So commissioners, if you have preference on either, we're happy to implement.
Well, I guess my thought is just to make the schedule exactly, if nothing else, exactly these numbers we've advertised. It's not going to be revenue neutral because we're going to go through a change here in April 1st, likely, right? We're likely to have a rate increase, and we're going to have a restructuring. And the restructuring is going to change what's revenue neutral too, isn't it?
No, the restructuring, because these are modifiers to the kilowatt hour rate,
right?
The restructuring should not impact that. These are not percentage modifiers, they are cent modifiers. So assuming that customers in the future consume as many kilowatt hours as they have in the past, these would be revenue neutral regardless of the rate restructure. Of course, that's a big assumption with COVID and so many people working from home at the moment, but we are working with the best we can.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Maybe I'm the only one that has concerns.
Well, I this Commissioner Olson, I can see what you're saying. I guess I don't understand. I guess I don't understand if we were to direct you to do that. What does that do? How does that affect the program in terms of how it was built?
Sure. Yeah. Given the number of customers who are looking to be enrolled in the program at approximately 600, I would think in terms of revenue, we'd be talking hundreds or maybe thousands of dollars for the PUD. So certainly we could just make that weekday rate be equal to the Schedule 7 rate and live with it not being exactly perfectly revenue neutral.
The other, if you wanted it revenue neutral, then you would have to then slightly adjust either the discount or the peak rate upwards, which I would be hesitant because customers are expecting those discount and peak rates to be where they are and not go
marketed them. Yeah.
And so, I guess that's my point about the weekday rate is I think they're expecting that to be our standard Schedule 7 rate and not expecting it to be more than the standard Schedule 7 rate. I know it's a tiny bit, and I know these are our customers who are the most involved and are excited to be a part of this, and they're not likely to complain. I'm just concerned that we've talked about it being one thing and then we're making sort of little adjustments here. And I understand why now about the revenue.
I think the suggestions of the commissioners to go to the standard rate is probably the least impactful for us, reducing that down. It's, you know, like Brian says, it could be a couple, you know, hundreds to $1,000, but, you know, the expectation and the matching expectations is really critical for customers, I think.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that'd be the better route to go. And as far as the revenue neutrality concern, isn't that going to, Peter and Brian, depend on volume as well in the end? I mean, we've made an assumption. And the assumption we know right off the bat, as Scott Jones always said, is wrong.
Absolutely.
So not ideally going to be revenue neutral anyway. So to me, that would be the way to go is to just make the weekday rate our standard Schedule 7 rate and then adjust in the future if we need to from the revenue neutral perspective. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does.
I concur.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we will have this, we will mark up the attachments for you and bring it back next time for approval. Anne, do you have any concerns about the timeline on this? We don't need to worry about like a fresh public notice or any process thing like that, do we?
Sorry, this is Anne Spangler. Thanks, Brian. No, I don't have any concerns about that. I think the changes that will be made between now and approval have all been discussed here during the public hearing, and they don't seem to warrant another public hearing.
Oh, okay.
And you're okay with that approach, Brian?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, Peter, I'll let you finish your presentation after one big derailment.
Okay. Thanks for the comments, though.
Yes.
I do not mean to skip out on Flex Peak. Flex Peak is the critical peak pricing program. Flex Peak has the appeal of limited customer disruption. So as you recall, there is a limited number of times that we can use this over the course of a winter season. For the rest of the time, there is a discount rate. As you can see, 9.03 cents per kilowatt hour. That's about a 10% discount rate, and that's available year round. And so that's, again, another amazing discount if you think about all those hours that is applicable. And the peak rate would be a maximum of 15 events, 4 hours, whenever we call an event. So So that means 60 hours during the winter that we could call. And it would be limited to the November 1 through February 28th period during the pilot. And that peak rate, though, would be significantly higher at $1 per kilowatt hour. When customers receive that signal, which would be the day before that event, they'd be asked to shift their energy use away from those hours that are specified. And some customers in the pilot will have smart devices such as smart thermostats or EV chargers that can automatically avoid those periods to reduce the charging or the heating that happens during that period of time. Customers also would be able to choose to turn on those devices, so we wouldn't control those devices. It would be the customer's choice whether or not to use energy, to what extent they do during those hours. And it would also be applicable to the other activities going on in the customer's houses that they could be shifting energy use around too. So they could opt to use other devices outside of the smart devices to avoid energy use and save money in doing so.
Peter, I was going to wait and ask you this later, but I'm planning to be a Flex Peak customer. And for years, we've always turned the heat down at bedtime to about 60 and then up to about 68 when we get up. And we just do that automatically ourselves without any of those gadgets. I'm sure they're wonderful, but we don't use that. We have a good thermostat that we just operate manually. Will that work with your system, the Flex Peak system, without having Nest or any of those?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. You know, for years, I can say that we appreciate your awareness and attentiveness to that, because that's the kind of thing that we want all our customers to do. But we have the Flex Peak customer choice segment, which is not associated with smart devices. And it's exactly as you say, if you're the kind of person that is really aware of your energy use, and you're trying to work with the PUD, you just don't have to have smart devices. You can just do everything you can during those hours.
That's what we do. That's what we do. And, you know, I hang my laundry out when it's okay. The only smart thing in my house is my partner.
And
my cell phone. Yeah.
I'm going to predict that you're going to do pretty good in this program. So I'll be curious to know. So thank you very much.
Yep.
Well, this is Commissioner Olson. I don't know if it's my turn yet. I got two issues. One, I would ask council, shouldn't this public hearing actually not be closed and actually be extended and reopened at the next meeting?
Commissioner Olson, I think we could probably go either way. Our practice has been to leave the public hearings open, for example, with our budget. So I think we could go ahead and just leave this open.
Well, that's my observation.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
I would suggest that Commissioner Logan can extend the public hearing until the next meeting.
Okay. And that would give the people who are drafting the resolution time to look at the things that I've pointed out in my document. I wouldn't have to go over them today necessarily. I could. I mean, there are only six things where I noticed problems in the draft itself. And it might have just been, you know, somebody working fast, you know, trying to get it done by this meeting. But, you know, they're just things that need to be looked at.
Hey, Commissioner, if you have any notes for us, please do send them over and we'll look to integrate into the next draft of this.
If we're going to postpone it, then we won't be voting on it today. And that would give us time to do that. Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Commissioner Olson, I did have a second item.
Yes.
My second item is in the development stage of these pilot rate schedules, there were comments made about the fact that programming it into our systems, that there were some complexity to that. And I'm just curious as to how that has proceeded in addressing that.
So generally, I would say that our approach has been to maximize the value for the type of integrations that we do. Keeping in mind that it is a pilot program, that there will need to be compromises, and that we are undergoing some major changes. Our team and our the time we have available for our team to do those types of integrations is limited, right? So as a result, I think the ability to get data into our system, we've been basically confirming the integration so that we can apply the rates to the bills to make sure that we are getting the interval data in, that we can test that out. We have been testing our platform that we use to implement some of the or implement the events, so that we know what we can expect and we can figure out the timeline for that. I think our team is on track with what we expected to do. We've had to do a lot of detailed testing around that. I mean, if there's a specific item that you have a question on, I can
try to answer. No, it's just in general. I mean, we're introducing more complexity to in these pilots and then well into the future. So I am assuming that the programming, the behind the scenes programming would become more complex. And the reason I raise it is it was discussed earlier, and I just wanted to make sure that was high on the list as you were moving along on these projects. You don't want to end up with an annual manual interface when you really get to expanding these programs.
And Commissioner, I can speak to that a little bit. Okay. For the pilot, we do have a somewhat interim solution to build these. However, as part of the Connect Up launch, that programming work is really beginning in the near future. So that way it'll be ready to go for a broader rollout.
Thank you.
So before we move on, I want to make sure, Melissa, you concur that we will hold the public hearing open until the next meeting on the 21st of September.
Yes. I agree. Thank you.
Right. Any other questions before Peter continues with the presentation?
I actually have one more question for Anne on the procedure side. Anne, we would be asking the commission to approve this rate document on the same day that we would be asking them to approve a BPA pass-through. So that discount rate there on the right in green, we would normally apply the pass-through to that. Should we come back with a rate schedule that reflects the pass-through, or should we order this so the commission would be voting on this prior to voting on the pass-through?
I think the latter, and that's a good question. I just think it would be simpler to order them differently.
Thank you. We will make a legal science project out of this yet.
Yep.
Well, okay. So they're not coming together. They're not going to be merged.
Correct.
Right. And okay.
What you'll do is.
I'm fine with that. Okay.
Right. I think you will have a continuation of the public hearing on these two rate schedules.
Mm-hmm.
First on the agenda, and then you'll close that public hearing and take action, and then open another public hearing for the BPA.
For the pass-through. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Peter, I think if there's no additional discussion, you can get back to it.
Okay, I heard a moment of silence there, so I will.
Sorry, Peter.
No problem. You guys are all keeping this on track, so I appreciate that. So I think I've gone through both of the supplemental rate schedules. Just an update on our enrollment. As you can see in the graph here, this was as of the 17th, so we had just under 500. We're at 573 now. And so our enrollment period has ended as of the 3rd of September. So we're at 573. This graph is just a little bit dated because of when it was produced, but this kind of gives you a sense of where our numbers are. We can also see some of the communication marketing activities that occurred over that period. We are planning on keeping track of our learning that we've gotten internally and some of the feedback that we've gotten from customers on what was effective, what wasn't, what they like to see, and to try and give ourselves some recommendations if we were to do this again, as well as on the integration side. You can see here the enrollment by group, the flex time enrollment on the left-hand plot there. You can see TOD, customer choice, that's the flex time customer choice where customers don't have a smart device. Very widely subscribed, just over 200 there. We also have Ecobee customers able to sign on to the time of day, the flex time program, as well as ChargePoint. Customers owning charge point devices, which is a EV charger. For Flex Peak, there was also a customer choice segment. So I believe Commissioner Wolf said that she has signed up for it.
I am signing up for it.
All right. Nest owning customers can also join this. Flex Peak, as well as Enelec, customers who own Enelec EV chargers. And then finally, for Flex Response, this is the DR program, which doesn't have a separate supplemental schedule if you own a Nest or Enelec, then you can join this segment here. So these are our nearly current numbers. We will, I'm sure, be showing some of our final recruitment into these segments shortly, but this is the end of this presentation. I don't know if there's any further questions. I think these next steps are need to be updated based on what we've talked about today, but we're having another afternoon, another continuation of the public rates hearing, and we'll be looking for Commissioner Wolf's comments in written form, as well as updating based on what we've said here.
Okay, any other questions or comments, commissioners?
Commissioner Logan, did you and Commissioner Olson want to go know what the edits were on the record to see if they're approved to have staff change them on the resolution?
You know, unless Commissioner Wolf is asking for that, if she's asking just that her suggestions be passed on, I would encourage her to email them to you and then you can pass them on.
Okay, I just wanted to confirm the language used was whether they were just suggestions or if they were going to be changed.
I don't know what they are. I have no interest really in changing the wording. I was worried about the tables.
Well, I'm worried about, I mean, not worried about, I'm interested in all of it, but I'm just kind of a stickler on resolutions being correctly written, and that's all. And I will send it to you, Allison, and you can pass it on. It's up to the maker, I mean, you know, the person who's doing the drafting to decide.
Yeah, the only reason why I asked, I just looked at it and some of it is would change all future resolutions. So I just wanted to make sure that staff knew that before implementing any of the changes.
Well, I thought they were mostly just typos.
Some of them were consistent and not typos, just how we word some of the resolutions and punctuation. So I just wanted to be sure that everybody was on the same page.
I see them as suggestions and for staff to
Thank
review.
You.
Yeah, I do too, of course.
Okay, well, if no other comments, I will say that Brian and Peter, thank you so much. I'm not trying to rain on our pilot. I'm so excited that we're doing this. I'm so glad that we're doing this work, but I just, I just wanted to address that issue. So thank you so much. So I will continue. The public hearing will continue on to our next scheduled meeting of September 21st, 2021. Next is item six, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO general manager or his designee to execute an electric vehicle charging station installation agreement with HopeWorks Social Enterprises. Mm-hmm. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. We have Susie Oversby available to answer any questions. First, are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any. Are there any questions from you, commissioners, or comments?
It's very well written.
Any other comments or questions?
I have none. No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is Commissioner Olson. I have none.
Okay. I have none either. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6B, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO general manager of Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County to execute an interlocal agreement with the City of Everett regarding the purchase, installation, and use of resonant magnetic induction charging system for the electric buses at Eclipse Mill Park near downtown Everett. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, Susie Oversby is available to answer any questions. I'll first ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. If there is, please raise your hand. Not seeing anyone raising their hand. Are there any comments or questions from you, commissioners?
No, just.
I'm excited about this one. This is
me too. Awesome. Yeah, me too. This one and the next one.
All right. Sounds like there's no questions. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6C, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO general manager or designee to execute a capital agreement for Clean Energy Fund 3 grant with the Washington State Department of Commerce for funding for HopeWorks Station Community EV Charging. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Susie Oversby is also available to answer any questions about this. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any comments from the public. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
It's a great program.
Commissioner Olson, you have no questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I have no comments.
Okay. I have none either. So I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6D, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO general manager or designee to execute a capital agreement for Clean Energy Fund CEF3 grant with the Washington State Department of Commerce for funding for electric bus charging with Everett Transit. I will call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay, Susie Oversby has been very busy and she's available to answer any questions about this one as well. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Mm-hmm. If so, please raise your hand. Not seeing any questions or comments from the commissioners.
No, I have none.
That's Commissioner Olson. This is, again, the work of our staff for this series of resolutions in terms of obtaining grant money from the Clean Air Energy Fund. Can't remember that's what it's called, but anyway, in obtaining grants, I think that we got a good share of that money.
Yeah, we did well.
Good percentage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right, Susie, clean sweep. Thank you so much for all these projects. Do you have any comments?
No, just thank you very much for your support. And we're, I know we and our partners are excited to get to work on these. So yeah. Looking forward to updating you on the progress. Thank you.
Exciting stuff. All right. Next, we have item 7, our CEO General Manager report. Do you have a report for us today, John?
I do have a couple items to share with the board. First off, out of our facilities, generation, power rates, and transmission group, revisions in data submitted by PGE for the residential exchange benefits resulted in an additional residential exchange program benefit of $1.3 million per year for the district's Schedule 7 customers. The district's forecast residential exchange program benefit is approximately $15 million over fiscal year 22 and 23. Last week, the district signed an agreement to enhance the firmness of the transmission pathway between the Packwood Hydroelectric Project and the Snohomish PUD service territory. In August 2018, power scheduling staff requested a long-term firm redirect on this pathway, but PPA could not grant the redirect request due to network flow gate and congestion concerns. Earlier this year, after analysis, PPA extended an offer of conditional firm service for the 6-megawatt redirect request. The conditional firm service provides significant improvement in the firmness of the reservation and supplies that value at no additional cost to Snohomish. This offer will serve as a bridge between our long-term firm redirect request and the completion of the work required to accept our request. In our HR group, managers are continuing the hard work of rewriting non-represented job descriptions. We're happy to report managers have submitted 70% of the job descriptions and are well on their way to completing this heavy lift. Future discussions with leadership will focus on building job families, promotional and career paths, and we will return to the commission later this year for a more robust discussion on the compensation philosophy. The open enrollment for the Allstate Benefits Plan, the Life Plus Long-Term Care, ended Friday, August 27th. This project was a significant demonstration of the HR team moving mountains to provide our team PUD with an alternative to the Washington State's long-term care program. In just a few short weeks, the HR team helped over 800 employees enroll in the Allstate plan so they could take advantage of the one-time opt-out of the Washington State LTC plan. For employees who choose not to opt out of the state's LTC plan, the payroll tax will begin on January 1st of 22. And another positive move by the HR benefits team, they are continuing to meet one-on-one with PUD retirees to help them transition from the current HRA administrator, Navaya, to the new administrator, Flagstaff, beginning January 1st. The HR team has provided significant value to our retirees by helping them receive reimbursements for medical expenses they had not previously submitted. Thanks to the focus of our HR on our retirees, and the retirees' employee experience, some retirees are seeing well over $10,000 in reimbursements they didn't know they had coming. In our customer and energy services, a community assistance update, an update from our last meeting, our CSRs have applied the first round of federal eviction rental assistance to 119 households for a total of over $100,000 given directly to our customers in need. This is just the start. We will work with the Snohomish County and their partners to serve more households monthly until these federal funds are exhausted. The first batch of federal funds has to be exhausted by spring of 2022, and we will work to far exceed that date of applying the assistance to thousands of our customers. Additionally, some of the subsequent stimulus batches can be spread out until 2025, and we expect to see thousands of our households receive assistance. And we'll provide more updates as that continues to progress. And then finally, this is from our financial team, and this was actually written by Julia Anderson, and I want to give her kudos for this recap. I'd like to give a huge shout out to James Thompson in our financial division. Last week, James virtually hosted the Western Energy Institute Financial Forum, the WEI Financial Forum. He worked with WEI's facilitators and put together a program where 20 different utilities and their finance groups came together to discuss the industry. James coordinated SnowPud's participation as host of the event, which included several of our own staff members. Our CFO, Scott Jones, participated in a CFO panel discussion on our approach to disaster management and risk mitigation. And I had the opportunity to close the day with a discussion on how SnowPut is adopting to new technologies, creating a culture of DEI, and how finance has a significant role in the future of our industry. It was a fantastic event. We were able to share our own perspectives with numerous other utilities and get some insights into their challenges and opportunities. Thanks to all those that participated, and a particular thanks, huge kudos to James Thompson for all the work and coordination to make that event happen. And that is it.
Any questions for John about his report, comments?
No. Kudos to you for your part.
It's not me. I just try to stay out of the way. We just have an amazing group of talented folks.
I will say I was impressed that Allison was out in safety days talking to every employee, walking around, checking with every employee to make sure they knew about the new insurance program before it's, with the short turnaround on them. So thank you, Allison.
That was also a great event, that Safety Days program. I really stayed with it all day and really enjoyed it and learned a lot.
I was actually teasing Allison, and I thought she and her staff may be getting paid commission for the all the help they were providing on the long-term care. they really did. They went over and above to help folks, even myself. Which I know I'm high maintenance anyway, but they really did help tremendously.
Well, it was impressive. I talked to someone that works for another major employer, a larger major employer in the area, and they were lamenting the fact that they had an option with an insurance company they'd never heard of and weren't very comfortable with. And so it was amazing how we got right on this, researched it, found a good deal for our employees. So yep. Anyway.
All right. HR team just killed it. They did a great job.
All right. Next is item 8, commission business. We have A, commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
Just that, I think all of us have participated in the routine PPC and I think we have, most of us anyway, PPC and PNUC meetings and the Environmental Alliance, Economic Alliance. Some of those are really very stimulating, informative, and the EASC meetings you can watch even after the fact if you don't get up in time or if you miss one. I guess Allison is the one who we need to request Allison to give us the access, something like that, right? Yeah.
Okay. Any other reports, commissioners? Nope. I will just say I was glad that I was able to attend Safety Days in person. Beautiful weather in the day I went, and I got to put out a fire with a fire extinguisher, which I had not practiced on in more than 30 years, and watch the pole rescue. It was interesting to see how quickly they could rescue somebody off a pole. In fact, I think it took longer for them to get the dummy up on the pole to do the demonstration to safely remove the dummy from the pole. So anyway, it's very impressive. And boy, those are young people, those learning skills. No, the apprentices, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was clever how they suspended the flag.
Yeah.
From those cherry pickers, or yeah, whatever you call them.
Basket. Any other commission reports?
No.
Okay. Next is our commissioner event calendar. Are there any changes to the commissioner event calendar?
I would say that the October 4th meeting on board linkage, I believe that's right. I hope that will just be the first of a longer workshop. I think I've spoken to that before. I think there is quite a bit to learn before we actually get to any policy changes on that. But
Commissioner, excuse me, we're not on that part yet. We're on the event calendar.
I always get those mixed up.
This is our schedule of the things we're attending.
I beg your pardon.
That's okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Logan, I think I missed. I'd ask at the beginning of this afternoon's agenda, I wanted to make a comment on the redistricting work.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And, did I miss my part?
Well, you did. I said a couple times, is there anything else? But I had forgotten.
Oh, well, what can I tell you?
So let's pick that up and then we'll start with our event calendar.
It's just very brief. And okay. I just wanted to, it's my hope that as you're working through the, I know that the redistricting is just really a process, but in terms of making the presentation to the board, that the clerk and the assistant clerk are included in that process. And the reason I'm asking for that is the last meeting, I believe we had the another issue that came before us on 5-member district. And there were some things about that presentation that I thought, gosh, how come that came to us? And I chewed the clerks out about it and found that they really hadn't been involved in the final stages of that. So I'm not asking for a direction from the board. I'm just stating that this commissioner would hope that consideration be given in those areas where it's directly the board's business. That's all I have to say.
You know, I do have kind of an issue or a request to make, and that is, I think it's really important, as we did today, we acknowledged and gave a lot of appreciation to Angela, I think it's Johnson, is that right? And I think it's really important that we acknowledge our staff, our workers, our employees, all of them. And so from time to time, on the commission, we get maybe a complaint or a compliment or something, you know, from members of the public who are the owners of the PUD, really, the voters. And actually, without exception, the answers that they come up with, the responses, the research that they do and how they respond are just phenomenally good, really good, fantastic. So I am always wanting to know who really wrote that. So it bothers me that the names are removed as if we shouldn't know who did that brilliant work. So I think we used to see who wrote the response, but now it just says staff. And it's really hard. I mean, what would be wrong with saying thank you in, you know, maybe a note to one of the clerks to say, please forward this to so-and-so for us, this note of appreciation, not in response to everything that we get, but a way to get back to people and let them know that we really value what they've come up with and their communication skills in terms of like the DEI program. It's really sensitive and diplomatic. And I just think they do a great job. And I'd like to personally thank them occasionally, not all of them, but you know.
Well, I think there's an avenue for that. I did that several times. I will email Allison and I will say, please thank the staff that worked on this, great response, those kind of things. And she'll forward that on to the appropriate staff. So
I get that.
I think we have a way to personally thank somebody.
But how do we know who it is? I mean, if I, you know, if I bump into them at family day or something like that, I'd like to say, you know, I think you do such a good job, but I don't know who. Maybe you're happy with this anonymity, but I'm not.
This Commissioner Olson, I will share that I do something similar to what Commissioner Logan does, but what I do is I will send a direct note to John with a request to pass on to staff, and I will give more specific information about my appreciation or good staff work. Mm-hmm. Because I think that from the employee's perspective, then they see that the big boss has seen about it, and probably their division level, and anyway, it goes through others so that the employee can see that others, that they have been recognized. Now, I will tell you on the other side of the coin, there have been some times where I thought perhaps some things were lacking, and I'll let John know about that too. But that's how I handle it.
Well, I respect your choices, but I guess I like to be able to connect with people on a more personal basis. And it seems like there's an effort to deprive us of that opportunity between commission and staff. It's like another wall between us. And that's just how it seems. I mean, yeah, I could send a note and say, please thank staff for this excellent letter, something like that. But we used to be able to see who had sent the note or called. And now we can't. So why, you know, why not?
So I'd actually turn to Melissa and or Allison, who could probably better answer this, but I don't know that it's a deliberate intent to, you know, keep the staff who worked on a response, you know, unknown. I think it's just in the process, and I don't see there's any issue if, you know, to give, to let the commission know who is responding to a particular topic or question.
Well, that's how I feel about it.
But, yeah. But again, it goes back to, we still want all your communication going through the commission office and or myself to staff. So, you know, it's not an avenue for you to, you know, go outside of the policy guidelines and emailing staff. But I don't think that's the intent for you.
I understand. Okay, I get that. And I agree with you that there should be no problem in knowing specifically who did this great work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm open for Melissa and or Allison to tee that up.
We've always just written, here is staff's response, and we just copy and paste their response. We don't, because sometimes it comes from a whole team of people. We don't know, we may just get the email from, you know, it may come from one person, but it may have been 10 people that worked on it. We've been doing that for the last couple of years, 2 years probably.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Status quo, we've always done it this way. I'm just saying in this case, we like to recognize, you know, really excellent work and important contributions. And if it's staff, then you at least you could say which department, you know, because I'm really interested in like who's doing this and who's doing that.
Yeah, we can figure out how to make that happen. I don't think that's that difficult.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I'd prefer to keep my, if you're going to think about how to set it up, I prefer to keep my practice of sending my observations and compliments to the CEO. And then it's his prerogative to send it into the organization. I'd prefer to keep that.
Yeah, I'm good with that approach. This is just on our end. I actually like that approach, Commissioner Olson.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, if I have a comment occasionally, I certainly would be happy and would CC to John and Melissa and Allison, anybody. I mean, I would not want to hide my praise.
Commissioner Wolf, I just want to make sure that you're not directly emailing staff and CCing us, I think is the issue. It still needs to come through us and we will send that on your behalf, not you directly emailing staff. John, is that your still understanding?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because that's the policy that we've all agreed on, right? The practice.
Right.
But I'm okay with making the board aware of who has formulated the response.
Okay.
So how are we going to know who did it?
Well, it sounds like they're going to identify who sent the response. Now, we won't know if there's 10 people that were involved. We won't know all of them, but we'll know the person who got back to the customer. Is that my understanding, John and Melissa?
Yeah, or who has formulated the response.
I'm making a mountain out of a molehill here. I'm sorry.
So let's hear our.
We can acknowledge in our response to the commissioners who has worked on this particular question. That should be the only change in process.
So I wanted to take on to Commissioner Olson's conversation about redistricting, and I want to make sure that it comes to us with enough time that we can look at it and, you know, have a chance to impact the boundaries if they don't seem logical or reasonable to us. So I've been through the process before. It's an interesting process, and I just want to make sure we have time to respond. Anything else under commission business before we move on to our commission, back to our commission event calendar? Okay. Any changes to our commissioner event calendar?
Well, I just wanted to explain that with Allison's help, I had signed up to go in person to the NWPPA annual meeting. It's this early this week, I believe. It was 6, 7, 8. And it was in the Tri-Cities. And when I did a little research and I saw how few people, the percentage of people who had been vaccinated over in that part of the state, mm-hmm. and how many, and their peak was just, you know, they're maxed out on their hospitals and all of that, I decided it would be wiser to not do it. Although I hated that because there were some sessions that I really hated to miss. But anyway, Allison, we switched it. At first it was going to, it was not virtual. It was not available.
Oh, that
virtual.
Was my, yeah. The note.
Huh. So doggone it, I had to miss one of my favorite meetings. But c'est la vie.
Okay. Next, we have item 8C, 2021 budget forecast and major project status reports, July results. We have Sarah Bond available to answer any questions regarding the report. Any questions about the report, commissioners?
I don't think so. No.
You just give me a second. I have notes, but I don't know if any of them are.
Well, while you're looking, I'll start us out. So Hat Island replacement.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like we're sort of stalled out. Can someone give us a little more detail on, are we going to try another path to connect to Hat Island?
I'll give you the short version of that, Commissioner Logan. They rejected the Tulalip rejected the proposal for easement. So the short, I'll say short term, or next step is myself and Guy Payne are trying to arrange through Shelley Pattison a meeting with, and Brenda White, a meeting with the Tulalip leadership. And at the same time, in parallel, the Hat Island team are exploring what other options we may have on routes.
Okay.
But would it still go underwater?
Yeah, that's, yes.
How much of that island belongs to the Tulalips?
It's all private.
Yeah, I don't. From my understanding, it's all private.
It's private, yeah.
Any other questions on the report?
May I ask you one more question about that? So if it's all privately owned, why does the Tulalip tribe have the right to decide exactly where it goes and how it's going to operate?
I understand that part of the sound is within their jurisdiction.
So, okay. Thank you. That's exactly what I was guessing, but I did not know.
Yeah, I think it comes ashore on the mainland in their jurisdiction.
Okay.
On the west side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners?
I have none.
All right. Nope. Thank you for the report, Sarah. Next, we have our governance planning calendar, item 9A. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar?
Oh, I have none.
Go ahead.
Sorry. It's not a change, but I just want to repeat that on the October 4th meeting, I think we may need time after that business meeting to have a workshop on this issue.
Okay.
Well, I'm assuming that based upon the board's previous direction, staff is coming forward with some information for us to consider. Is that what the focus of the 4th is, October the 4th?
Yeah, so, we asked. Oh, go ahead, Melissa.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was gonna say, we requested that that staff come back to us with a plan for our board owner linkage. And so that's what they're coming back to us. And then I think we listen to that report and then we can discuss it. And then if we need additional or not, we just go from there. But I think the first thing is to allow them to give us the report that we requested from them.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Any other changes or discussion about the governance planning calendar? Other than, of course, we'll have to put the pilot back on as a public hearing on September 21st.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board today? Well, hearing none, it is now 3:12 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned. Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Best wishes.
Thank you.